Good morning. It's time for Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. The purpose of Open Journal is to provide media access to the greater Houston community. Sometimes it's talk, sometimes it's music, sometimes it's controversial, but Open Journal is always eclectic and it's always KPFT. At the end of the hour, we'll tell you how you can support this station and host a program. Stay tuned for your calls and more after headlines from London. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT. KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
BBC News with Gaynor Howells. The head of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Saeed Jalili, has made an unexpected visit to Syria for talks with President Bashar Assad. The men were expected to discuss ways to secure the release of a group of Iranians being held hostage by Syrian rebels. Jim Muir reports.
Syrian state TV showed pictures of President Assad receiving the Iranian envoy, the first time Mr. Assad's been seen on television for several weeks. The report said only that the two men discussed relations between the two countries and the situation in the region. Mr. Jalili has been saying that outside parties should encourage an end to the violence and the opening of dialogue among the Syrians. Iran's planning to hold an international meeting in Tehran on Thursday to promote that idea, but it's not clear who will attend.
Shares in the British bank Standard Chartered have fallen sharply after financial regulators in New York accused the bank of hiding more than $250 billion in illegal transactions with Iran. Standard Chartered shares in the bank dropped by 25% in morning trading in London. The BBC's Karen Hogan has more.
The New York State Department of Financial Services accused the bank of hiding as much as $250 billion worth of financial transactions with Iran for nearly a decade. The bank denied the allegations and said it strongly rejected the position or portrayal of facts by the regulator. It's due to appear before the regulator next week. If found guilty, it could be stripped of its New York banking license.
Much of the Philippine capital, Manila, is underwater after more than 24 hours of continuous rain. At least five people have died and 20,000 people have been evacuated from their homes in and around Manila. Schools, government offices and the Philippine Stock Exchange were closed and transport disrupted. A province in western Afghanistan has experienced a second day of strikes on Tuesday as people continued their protest about growing insecurity, especially a recent surge in kidnappings. Many shops and businesses in Herat remained closed. Police say they've arrested 65 suspected kidnappers in the last 4 months. At the London Olympics, tens of thousands of cheering supporters gathered in central London to watch the triathlon, in which the British brothers Alistair and Jonathan Brownlee took the gold and bronze medals. This was how the British favourite Alistair Brownlee finished.
He slows down to a jog on the blue carpet. He's got the Union Jack around his shoulders. He can walk across the line. Alistair Brownlee is the Olympic triathlon champion.
Britain's 19th gold medal equaled its haul in Beijing in 2008. Meanwhile, in gymnastics, China's Fang Zhe won the men's parallel bars to extend China's lead in the medals table. Earlier, there was a setback for China when its best hope of gold in athletics, Liu Jiang, fell at the first hurdle in his heat, which was won by Andy Turner.
Liu Jiang anxious to get out of the blocks quickly after. Oh, he's gone. Oh my goodness, Andy Turner's got a real chance here to qualify. Turner's running well, comes off the last hurdle brilliantly and wins it.
Cameroon says seven of its athletes in London for the Olympic Games are missing. The athletes, five boxers, a swimmer and a footballer, are suspected of having abandoned Cameroon's Olympic team to stay in Europe for economic reasons. The first, a reserve goalkeeper for the women's football team, left during pre-Olympic training. In the past few minutes, Syrian state TV has quoted the Iranian envoy, Saeed Jalili, as saying that Syria is an essential part of the axis of resistance that Tehran will not allow to be broken. Gunmen in central Nigeria have shot dead at least 15 people in an attack on a church. Officials say the attack took place during a late-night service on Monday. Will Ross reports from Lagos.
The police say that about three gunmen stormed the Deeper Life Bible Church near the town of Okene, opening fire on the congregation. People were shot dead inside the evangelical church, and many others ran for their lives into the nearby bushes. A police spokesman for Kogi State said it was not yet known who was behind the attack. Suspicion will fall on the Islamist group Boko Haram, which has admitted many previous bombings and shootings at churches.
Kenya has opened its newly refurbished parliament building, which has been dogged by criticism over costs. Each chair in the parliament cost around $3,000, a considerable sum in a country where many people depend on food aid. Kenyan officials say the $12 million renovation brings parliament into the digital age. BBC World Service News.
Good morning. This is Community Conversation. I'm Mike Honig, sitting in for Dwayne Bradley. This is your show, so if you have something on your mind you want to talk about, please call in at 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT. We had a couple of interesting calls yesterday, both of them in one way or another about gun rights. So I did a little research in order to fill in some of the blanks, and this is the result. One caller cited an Obama quote that essentially claims that we should have a civilian militia, saying, as a quote from Obama, "We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded." That seemed out of context. So I did a little research. Here is the full context, and it was from 2008, I think it was July 12th, 2008. I have this on my website. I did it as a blog post, but I have a slightly edited version here for time. It says, "As president, I will expand AmeriCorps to 250,000 slots from 75,000, make that increased service a vehicle to meet national goals like providing health care and education, saving our planet, restoring our standing in the world. So we are going to send more college graduates to teach and mentor our young people, and we're going to grow our foreign service, open consulates that have been shuttered, and double the size of the Peace Corps by 2011 to renew our diplomacy." And then the excerpt, "We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded." In other words, we cannot rely on our military alone to meet our national security objectives. To turn that around with an out-of-context excerpt and say Obama supports militias is crazy. Another that I wanted to refine a little bit, I had a caller refer to Swiss gun laws, the Swiss Army Reserves, and he was essentially correct. He said that the people in the militia serve between the ages of 20 and 30. They are conscripted into the militia, undergo military and weapons training. They keep their personal weapons at home so that in the event of an invasion on their way to the muster points, they have a way to fight, if necessary, defend themselves. Each person is issued, depending on their weapon, they're issued about 50 rounds of ammunition in a sealed government-issued personal ammunition package, and that is inspected regularly to make sure that no unauthorized use has taken place. So we might learn something from the Swiss. You know, I made a comment yesterday to one of the callers that there's an old saying that your freedom ends at the tip of your nose, but your bullet's trajectory doesn't end at the tip of my nose, and I have a problem with that. I have Joe from Stafford on the line. Joe, good morning. What's on your mind today?
Yes, I was going to say something, but I had a question since you brought it up, which was the Swiss. What's the violent gun death by gun in Swiss or Switzerland?
I'd be lying if I told you I looked it up, but it is my impression that it is low. Because okay. Because all of those weapons that are taken home are known to be in the possession of the individuals right. by the Swiss government. They are essentially a form of National Guard, so they're under military authority. And the ammunition is only for emergencies. It is not for target practice or anything else.
It would just be interesting to compare the death rate by gun violence, Swiss to American deaths for, you know, edification. But my comment was to say that basically that if, you know, what goes around comes around. If we preach death and we glorify death and we have a lot of hate talking and dehumanizing each other, then these are the results of our actions, which is this violence that happens in Aurora in Wisconsin and, you know, in Oklahoma and, you know, all around our country. And matter of fact, around the world, as we, you know, manufacture all kinds of weapon systems and give proliferate them around the world. Egypt has got, what, $60 billion? I believe it's Egypt, $60 billion in weaponry.
I think that they're the second largest recipient of military aid after Israel.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we put that much money that we put into these two wars, at least, in Afghanistan and Iraq, into just building straight out, you know, hospitals and schools, I think that we could have done a lot better.
Yeah. Well, there's no question that, you know, you fight a war, it takes resources, those resources come from something else. That's basic economics. You have a finite amount of resources, and it just depends on how you choose to apportion them, for better or worse.
You get out of it what you put into it.
Exactly, exactly. I appreciate your calling, Joe.
Thank you.
The phone number is 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT. We do seem to frequently drift back into this Second Amendment conversation, but believe me, that's not the only thing I'm interested in talking about, so don't confine yourselves. Bobby, you're on the air. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, the out of context thing applies over here. So now you have people taking out of context, which is very common with people taking Obama out of context. They reverse whatever he says whenever they can. And that's another example.
Yes.
But being out of context in another way is that if we'd had conscription here, we wouldn't have had the Iraq war. We wouldn't have had Afghanistan.
I agree.
Maybe Afghanistan for a few minutes, but it would have, there would be protests in the street.
Yes.
That is why they don't want conscription here. And the other thing is that when, you know, they say that Switzerland has this and that and they take their guns home. Well, guess what? They also do not have wars. They are neutral almost, well, by international treaty, I believe.
Yes.
And they actually do have defense, not offense, like we do.
Yes.
And so this is another thing. So these people here who want to have a machine gun in their closet are actually soldiers out of context.
You're talking
bogus soldiers, too.
I'm sorry, are you talking about the Swiss or the Americans?
Well, Americans.
Yeah.
We have soldiers out of context. In other words, these people can go out and shoot people up. Oh, I'm a soldier protecting the Constitution, but they're out of context here.
Yeah, the thing about a well-regulated militia is that you're supposed to be well-regulated in an organized, state-sponsored militia. You know, I asked one caller a few days ago, given an expansive definition of gun rights, if he would feel safer if I had, half a dozen 75-millimeter howitzers in my front lawn to make sure that our tyrannical government did not get out of control.
Or the neighborhood association didn't wrongly accuse you of planting roses where petunias should,
yeah,
go. I mean,
oh, that is such another story entirely. Homeowners associations, that's like a whole other conversation.
Right. Well, I appreciate it. I just know that this out-of-context thing has gotten out of hand, not just out of context.
Yeah, I think that the most egregious example of an out-of-context statement is when Obama was actually quoting somebody else. And then the Romney campaign ran this excerpt without the point that he was quoting somebody else saying this thing, and they simply had Obama saying this thing. And that's just about as blatant a functional lie as I think you can tell. And now when Rance Priebus calls Harry Reid a dirty liar, you know, my notion is the whole world doing a double take when a Republican calls a Democrat a dirty liar. It's like, triple, really? You want to go there?
Triple take.
Triple take. Yes, sir. Thanks so much for calling, Bobby.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye. The phone number is 713-526-5738, and we are going to take a traffic and weather break and be right back.
This is KPFT Houston 90.1 Pacifica Radio. The time is 9:15. There is an accident involving one vehicle on I-10 East Freeway westbound at San Jacinto. Two main lanes are affected, and there is a heavy truck accident on I-10 Katy Freeway westbound at Barker Cypress Road. One shoulder lane is affected. There is slow traffic on 59 East Tex Freeway southbound from Quitman to 45. And the traffic is about 12 miles per hour. Travel time is about 12 minutes. The current temperature is 81 with partly cloudy skies, 85% humidity, 20% chance of showers today after 1 p.m. And there's the high today will be around 96 with heat index values as high as 106. Low tonight around 77. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality has issued an ozone watch for the Houston, Galveston, and Brazoria areas for Tuesday, August 7th. Atmospheric conditions are expected to be favorable for producing high levels of ozone pollution in the Houston, Galveston, and Brazoria areas. And now back to community conversation with Mike Honig.
Hi, this is KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. I'm Mike Honig sitting in for Dwayne Bradley. The phone number is 713-526-5738. An article crossed my eyes several days ago on NBCnews.com. The headline was, Temp Jobs Become a Permanent Way of Life. And a piece that I excerpted was about 2.53 million people are working temporary jobs as of June, an increase of more than 40% from the summer of 2009, when about 1.75 million people held such jobs. Goes on to say, employers have little reason to be worried about relying on temp workers. Many undoubtedly conclude they can just hire a batch of new ones if work picks up. And with temporary workers, they don't have to worry about the costs of benefits or severance. You know, it's worth noting that I think one of the biggest problems we have today, and I think it's because of the weakness of unions, is you have employers hiring so-called part-timers working 38 hours a week, and they don't get benefits because they're not working 40 hours a week. Because this show tends to be fairly short, it's probably a topic we'll get back to, but now I want to take a couple of callers. I've got Jack in the Woodlands. You're on the air, Jack. What's on your mind this morning?
Yeah, the article in the paper yesterday that 12 billionaires are funding 60% of all the crazy super PACs right now. I think what we need to do is redirect the crazy gun guys into going after the real problem in the world, those 12 guys.
I am sympathetic.
Just kidding about that, really.
One must be careful what one incites crazy gun people to do.
That's right. Well, hey, if they start going after the CEOs and the 12 billionaires that are directing all the politics now with their billions of dollars, I bet that would change. That's all I had to say.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, boy, I sure wish that Occupy was making itself felt again, because I think that was the one thing about the Occupy movement that everybody kind of agreed with.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, I appreciate your calling, Jack. I'm going to go now to Charles in Manville. Charles, you're on the air. How are you doing this morning?
Hey there, thanks so much. I might take this in a different direction.
I don't know
if you'd be interested or not, but here it is. I'm concerned about, and I guess aggravated by, the 13% tax rate that the very rich enjoy.
Is that because you're not among the very rich paying the 13% tax rate?
Yes.
I figured.
My thought would be, at least the subterfuge is that they're going to invest and create businesses, right?
That's the theory.
Is, let's give them a tax break on the backside. In other words, if you actually create a business, then you get the tax break. But you don't get the tax break on the hope that you will create a business.
And that's how the taxes used to be structured, that you had a very high nominal tax rate, and then you would get deductions based on investment for this and investment for that.
Yeah.
And as has been said many times, the thought's not original to me, job creators are not rich people. Rich people can't possibly spend all their money. Job creators are consumers. You take money from consumers, and the rich people do just fine because they just put that money somewhere else. But you have no consumers, so there's no incentive for jobs.
I'm sorry? They put somewhere else, like in foreign bank accounts, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, like the Cayman Islands, et cetera.
But here, then my thought would be, as I say, how about Mitt Romney? How many new businesses, not investing in GE and so forth, but how many new businesses has he created with his big tax break? I just think that'd be interesting to know.
It would be interesting to know. And, you know, maybe Harry Reid, who apparently rents Priebus, remarkably calls a dirty liar. Boy, what I'm rubber and you're glue. What you say bounces off of me and sticks to you. But what are you going to do? All right. Thank you so much, Charles. I appreciate your calling. Kevin in Houston, you're on the air. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Okay, thank you. What's on your mind?
I was wondering how many jobs Mitt Romney created with those taxes also.
I'm sure whoever's on his campaign staff, you know, they're employed.
No, but seriously, I just wanted to take it to economic policy of Barack Obama and the claims that that he just wants to punish the wealthy. But the people that are saying all the stuff that the Republicans are parroting through them, they're always like in the wrong tax bracket to say that. Like they don't qualify for any of the breaks.
Yeah, it's people voting against their own economic interests. It's a very strange thing.
Barack Obama is the main thing that Mitt Romney, his talking point is, I'm sorry, I'm mixing my words up. His main talking point against Barack Obama is that he needs to create jobs, okay? And I vividly remember, like, about a year ago, Barack Obama went to, like, the United Steelworkers and the auto workers unions and all that stuff, and he was like, pass this bill. We need jobs. We can't wait. He said it over and over again, and they stonewalled him. And now they're convicting him on his jobs.
Yeah,
on unemployment.
The problem that we're having, and it goes back to this dysfunctional Senate, is that we never used to require a two-thirds vote or a three-fifths vote on every single bill. And essentially what they're doing is they're stopping Obama from trying to initiate his policies, legislate his policies, and then they turn around and blame him for not legislating his policies. I appreciate your calling, Kevin. I have another individual on the phone that I'd like to get before we run out of time. Jose in Southwest Houston, you're on the air. What's on your mind this morning?
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I just kind of want to go back to a topic you were talking to when I turned on your show about 15 minutes ago. I just caught the tail end of a conversation about firearms and stuff. You know, and one of the things I really want to comment on is, first, I really wish that our legislators and the community in general would start reviving the debate of some kind of sane gun control, because I think that we as a society, we've just sort of become, we just sort of accept these random acts of what I call mass-scale violence, where you have multiple people being killed by firearms. You know, and to me, it is unacceptable. It's just unacceptable.
It's becoming like a weather report, 20% probability of mass killing this evening.
What is a probability?
No, I'm saying it's getting to be so common you can almost do a weather report on it. Well, there's a 20% of mass murder this evening.
That's my point. To me, it's unacceptable that we as a society accept this. I think it's a failure on society's part. Now, you know, I'm an optimist to some extent, because I think what needs to happen is, I think part of it is that the NRA and I think the right wing, they've taken control of the conversation.
Yes.
You know, we had in the 90s in the Clinton administration, we did have, you know, the assault weapons bill. But I think that what needs to happen is we need to have some kind of debate. And I think part of it is that, you know, the gun owners, and let me say this.
I need you to wrap this up in about five seconds.
All right. Are you going to be on the air tomorrow?
What is today? Today is Tuesday. I will be on the air tomorrow. Yes, sir. You can call on back. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Well, tomorrow, I think, is the last day I'm substituting for Dwayne. I'll probably be on the air intermittently during the fundraiser and hopefully at different points in the future. This is Houston KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm Mike Koenig, and I have a blog, thinkwingradio.com. You can read and write for me there. And remember, slower traffic, keep right. It isn't just a good idea. It's in the law and it's in the handbook. Have a great day.
Is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 7th of August, 2012. It's the birthday of the Dutch dancer and alleged spy Mata Hari, born Margarethe Zelle in Leeuwarden in the Netherlands in 1876. She married an army officer, and the two of them lived in Java and Sumatra for a few years. That's where she picked up her byname, Mata Hari, which means sunrise. They were divorced. They came back to Holland in order to make some money. She started dancing professionally in Paris and sometimes worked in a brothel. She had apparently sold some outdated information about France to the Germans in 1916, then later made a deal with the head of French intelligence to spy on the Germans in exchange for a pass to go to the Eastern War Zone and visit her Russian lover. But the French became suspicious that she was a double agent, and she was tried, convicted, and executed by firing squad in 1917, though one of her prosecutors later said there wasn't enough evidence against her to flog a cat. It was on this date, 1947, the raft Contiki finished its successful voyage from Peru to French Polynesia, a craft piloted by a Norwegian ethnologist named Thor Heyerdahl. Was out to prove that early South Americans could have traveled across the Pacific and settled in the Polynesian islands. So he made his raft of pre-Columbian materials, balsa logs lashed together with hemp ropes, a cabin made of bamboo with a thatched roof of banana leaves. It made the trip in 3.5 months, and Thor Heyerdahl wrote a best-selling book about it, The Contiki Expedition. It's the birthday of Anne Fadiman, New York City, 1953, who got an assignment to write for The New Yorker about a young Hmong girl with epilepsy and her parents' difficulty dealing with the American medical system. The New Yorker turned down the piece, and so Fadiman turned it into a book, The Spirit Catches You and You Fall Down. She's also the author of a couple of collections of essays, At Large and At Small, writing about her childhood butterfly collection on the art of letter writing. And it was on this day in 1934, the U.S. Court of Appeals ruled that James Joyce's Ulysses was not obscene. It had been banned in this country in 1920. It sold very well on the black market, but James Joyce and his publisher couldn't make any money that way, so they had to fight the ban, and that required Random House to provoke the government into a new obscenity trial. In 1933, Random House imported a single version of the French edition of Ulysses. It came in on a boat in New York, and Random House made sure the U.S. Customs Inspector would find it and seize it. Random House and Joyce appealed, and the judge, John Woolsey, ruled that it was not pornographic. He wrote, "In respect of the recurrent emergence of the theme of sex in the minds of his characters, it must always be remembered that his locale was Celtic and his season spring." Here's a poem for today by Phyllis Hope entitled Cleaning the Bathroom. Cleaning the bathroom is humbling and good. Enamel and glass feel smoother than wood as the mind, barely thinking, goes passive. Meanwhile, the hand gliding easily over the tile or toilet or mirror finds tangible peace in the rhythm of rubbing, a kindly release, and the patience of porcelain fixtures can drain what's flashy or fancy in favor of plain. In style unpretentious, demeanor serene, the bathroom is basic, its function to clean. Phyllis Hope, Cleaning the Bathroom, from her collection Hello House, published by Fithian Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, produced by Nick Vedder, written by Holly Van